Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Puppet Masters and Castle Freaks, the internet's leading all things Charles Band podcast. I am one of your hosts, Jared Hornbeck, coming to you from Brooklyn, New York, and I am happy to report that I have, in fact, been named Miss Pretty Face of Waco. And I think the listeners would also like to know that I am a podcast host who is getting enough roughage in my diet.
Oh, yes. We appreciate that.
Yeah. But I would be hard-pressed to come into this endeavor alone. So who is here with me today?
Well, it's me, the haunted dildo, Steve Guntley. And this is the podcast that's all about lady fingers, frosting boobs, and, of course, cookie crucifixions. That's because this is the podcast about the Ginger Dead Man and its sequel, the perfectly titled The Passion of the Crust. For better or worse, the Ginger Dead Man has become one of Full Moon's signature latter-day characters. But unlike his cohorts, Killjoy and Evil Bong, I think there's something just a little bit more interesting and thoughtful and weird going on beneath the surface of these movies that I am surprised to report on and excited to talk about. And we have a very cool guest joining us today to help sort through that. Who's joining us today, Jared?
So we do have a very special guest. This is a native Brooklyn filmmaker, producer, writer, a man of many hats. Because he's always wearing a hat when I see him. And he might have some cool stuff to report on coming out of the near future also. Adam Torkel is here, my good friend. Adam, what's up, dude?
Hey, it's great to be here, guys. I'm a big fan of the podcast. I have a storied history with Full Moon. And so I really enjoyed this opportunity to jump back into the Ginger Dead Man series.
Well, we're happy to have you, and we're happy to have a guide through these characters, because these are some of the big ones. These are a handful of like the most recognizable, at least the character has become like one of the most recognizable Full Moon characters, certainly of the last 20 years. And it's one I never quite got to, just because there's something pretty off-putting just about the marketing and about the design of this character, you know. And I will say, for better or for worse, these movies were not what I expected, like at all. I think both of them are very unusual in ways that I was really not prepared for.
Yeah, Adam, I'm going to hand it over to you because, you know, you mentioned here that you have a pretty long history with Full Moon, and you used to work for Full Moon a little bit as well. So what I want to ask you is to just tell our listeners a bit about your history with independent movies, because Full Moon really isn't where that ends for you. What got you interested, and, you know, stuff you've worked on through the years and how it led you to Full Moon.
So I was always like a monster kid, loved horror movies since I was young. I was always at the video store, 5603, still my video store number. I will remember. And the horror section was just always something I gravitated towards. And I had like cousins, my dad, all supportive. So if I liked one movie, they'd give me three more. And I've been lucky enough to work for a lot of great indie companies, Glass Eye, Wild Eye, Full Moon, Plot Digger, Troma. I've pretty much hit most of them. But Full Moon was definitely one of my favorites because I was a sales rep for them. I was the guy standing behind the table at conventions selling, selling all the stuff. And so Charlie was really cool about just giving us a lot of stuff and making sure that we knew the product. So about 10 years ago, I was deep in all these Full Moon movies, and I have not seen the Ginger Dead Man series probably since then.
Oh, when you say Charlie, Adam, are you referring to Band Charles or Band. Spradling?
Band, although Spradling is pretty fantastic herself.
Oh, I'm jealous of getting to meet both of them. But did you shift a lot of Ginger Dead Man merchandise when you were working this show?
Oh, a ton. We used to have like the resin statues that would go really quick. This was around the time where Ginger Dead Man was going against Evil Bong. So that was one of our big, big sellers for sure. But that was just such a fun job, just getting to talk about Full Moon movies and watch them and get all these fun little like toys and resin statues. It was definitely one of the more enjoyable jobs I ever had. Although I would spend all my money just at the conventions. So it wasn't necessarily profitable, but it was a great
time.
Hope
they gave you a discount at least. You know, you can get some of the merch.
The Full Moon stuff, Charles Band was really good about just giving us. But oh. then I would make money and go to every other table at the convention.
There you go.
That's where, yeah. Yeah.
That's how they get you.
Well, I feel you, Adam, because like we were at Forbidden Planet yesterday and you're talking about how fun it is as a job to watch full moon movies and talk about full movies and full moon movies. And Steve and I can attest to that. But yeah. walking around Forbidden Planet too, it was like they have the sealed individual Tiny Terrors boxes, like the ones where you don't know who's inside. And I'm like, I want to buy all of those. I've got my subspecies lunchbox here, but we were looking at the Trancers lunchbox in there, and there's so much full moon stuff there. And I just was walking around looking like, yeah, I could very easily spend a lot of my money on this stuff. So I applaud you not, burning through all of your savings, just buying merch and memorabilia.
I burned through a good deal. I definitely burned through a good deal of money.
Well, look, you need all that purgatory of the petite merchandise, you know, when that pops up, like you need all of them from Tiny Terrors 9. Well, let's jump into these movies because I think we have a lot to talk about with these. They're pretty wild experiences. Let's start with the original. The Ginger Dead Man was released August 30th, 2005. It's directed by Charlie Band. It's written by William Butler and Dominic Muir. And it stars Robin Sidney, Ryan Locke, Alexia Ailman, Jonathan Chase, Margaret Bly, Larry Cedar, and of course, Gary Busey. Gary Busey is the big name we need to talk about for this episode. For those who don't know who Gary Busey is, he's an Academy Award nominated actor. I think his Oscar was for the Buddy Holly story back in the 70s, a very good performance. And he kind of made a name for himself for giving a lot of wild-eyed villain performances, you know, or just like even characters like Point Break are like wild-eyed hero characters, you know, like he has this kind of very specific energy, this kind of madman energy that was really nice.
Unhinged cop who plays by his own rules.
Yeah, like even when he's playing cuddly, like in Silver Bullet or something like that, there's just something that always seems a little manic and dangerous about the guy.
Absolutely.
He's pretty notorious for some of his erratic and bizarre behavior. He very famously endured a severe head trauma in a motorcycle accident back in 1998. It caused permanent brain damage that reportedly changed a lot of his moods and behaviors and made him a little unpredictable. And he also had a long and public struggle with cocaine addiction that he has quit. He has given that up. So Charlie Band offered him $25,000 to appear in this movie for a one-day shoot and some voiceover work, which is a pretty huge salary for a full moon movie. That's roughly like one quarter of a full moon budget right there. And he was not expecting him to accept, but he took it on. But according to Band's autobiography, Busey was an absolute nightmare to work with. So he was erratic, he was temperamental, he was weird, he was lecherous to all the women on the staff and in the cast, and he was prone to just wandering off without telling anybody of his whereabouts. So he was fully sober while shooting this. You know, it was a Band made it very clear. Like he says that Gary Busey had a pretty severe addiction to sugar, and that does not appear to be like a euphemism. Like I think he really was. He said one of his contract riders was that he had to have a huge bag of like Halloween candy in his trailer. During one time that when they needed him for a shot, they went to his trailer. They found that the candy bowl had been completely decimated and that Busey was gone. They didn't know where he was. They found him in an alcove behind his trailer, like kind of squeezed up against the wall. He had two female crew members that he was essentially holding hostage with this long rant about women's pubic hair. And apparently he also tried to corner Robin Sidney later that day to try and give her acting lessons and things like that. And Charlie and Robin Sidney's mother had to come and intervene. But yeah, they only had him for one day. And that was apparently enough to convince them to stay out of the Gary Busey business forever. He was not invited back for any of the sequels. And I don't even think he's doing all of his voice work in this. Sometimes it's very clear, like there's a sound alike that's attempting to do a Busey voice for some of the puppetry.
And we learned by listening to We Hate Movies that if you want to do an impression of Gary Busey, you just try to do an impression of Holly Hunter. And then you just sound like Gary Busey.
That's good. Okay, that's good. Oh, okay. All right. I can see where you're doing that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
So Adam, you were nodding while Steve was telling that story, which is from the Confessions of a Puppet Master book. So, but just as a short tangent, before we get back into the movie proper, like I can imagine just the secondhand stories you probably heard from your full moon years. So like, I mean, was this one you'd heard before? This is one that had been floating around the water cooler.
Oh, that's full moon that's offices. Absolutely. That's absolutely one I heard before. It was always a lot more fun when Charles Band was at the table with us because he just has stories for days about everything. But that is absolutely, I've heard that story a couple of times and it sounds horrible. It sounds like the worst day of shooting ever.
I mean, and Charles Band like goes out of his way to be nice to actors in his book. Like he seems to have a good working relationship with most of the actors that he worked with. He didn't really have a bad thing to say about any of them. But he had this long negative story about Gary Busey, who...
Not a fan of Gary Busey.
No, and I can understand. I would not want to work with this, especially like, you know, and Band talks a lot about in his book about how he really wants to make his sets feel kind of like fun and have a family environment and things like that. And a guy coming through like on this weird tear, like harassing all the women on the staff is not conducive to that. And it's not cool.
It's the worst thing to have on a set.
Oh, 100%. But this does mark the full moon debut of Miss Robin Sidney, who, as of a few months ago, is the new Mrs. Charles Band. They'd been dating for a long time, almost, I think, not quite with this movie, but this was kind of the beginning of their professional relationship. And Robin Sidney, she's a staple of the latter day full moon run. We've singled her out as one of the highlights of the first Evil Bong movie because she's the one person in that movie who's like trying. You know, and which is always an unenviable position to be in. Like when nobody else is kind of meeting your level, they kind of strand you looking silly. But we see what you're doing, Robinson.
And that's not entirely unlike this movie.
Yeah, no, not entirely unlike that. Yeah. Like, I think she's bringing a little something here. And her character, Sarah Lee, would become a... Oh, God, I just understood that name.
Did you really just now?
Just now. This is the first time I said it out loud. Sarah Lee. Oh my God, I'm an idiot.
Jimmy Dean is one of the other characters.
Jimmy Dean and
Cadbury.
Yes. I can't believe it. See, I saw those and I never put it together with Sarah Lee. Oh, I'm an idiot. But either way, she would become a recurring heroine in the later crossovers with Ginger Dead Man and Evil Bong, despite the fact she already plays a totally different character in the Evil Bong movies. Doesn't matter. So according to screenwriter William Butler, who we've encountered a few times before, this movie started as a failed Mad TV sketch. All right. So William Butler had been trying to get on the writing staff of Mad TV for a couple of years. He sent a bunch of like pitches and none of them ever really got picked up. So when he started working with Charles Band, he suggested his concept, Ginger Dead Man, as a full length feature film. Charles Band loved the idea. He handed over the screenwriting rewrites to Dominic Muir, who he's best known for creating the Critters franchise back in the mid 80s, which is a movie that I really love. And for a while, he became kind of Charlie Band's go-to punch-up writer. So like everything from Decadent Evil to Evil Bong to Ginger Dead Man, like Dominic Muir did a pass on all of these. And sadly, we did lose him in 2010 at the age of only 48. Very sad. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he was doing a lot of work with Full Moon at this time.
I love that we have those kinds of writers, like people who would go on to be like Full Moon recurring staff writers. Like you got your Benjamin Carr and your Neil Marshall Stevens people. And I guess William Butler and Muir were two of those people too. And so it's just fun to see people returning and coming back and having an established role within the company. It gives you a sense of like community, I think, which, you know, we talk a lot about how a lot of these movies are really cheap and some of them are kind of cynical cash grabs, probably even admittedly, but there is something wholesome about it being like this fraternity of people working together to produce these things.
There is kind of a Muppet Show, like let's put on a picture kind of energy to a lot of the Full Moon stuff, like even at their worst, I think. Yeah. And those are the Full Moon movies that are the hardest to watch are the ones that do feel very tossed off and like we don't give a shit. Like there is mm-hmm. a little stretch like after Ginger Dead Man where we're going to be getting a lot of those. And I feel like in recent years, the company's kind of regained a little bit of its mojo in that sense. But this movie really was not what I expected it to be. It was closer to what I expected to be than the second movie was. But this one still kind of surprised me in a lot of ways. We get one live action scene with Gary Busey in what looks like the diner from Pulp Fiction. I'm pretty sure it is the same diner. He's a crazed serial killing criminal who murders this woman's whole family in a diner heist. And then he disappears from the movie. He gets executed off screen. And we get a nice helpful voiceover of him yelling, my mom is a witch or something like that. I'll be back.
They have to throw that in there.
He's electrocuted and cremated, and his ashes are sent to his mother, who apparently repurposes him as cookie dough, or as cookie mix, I guess, like a ginger dead mix. And the only thing that you need for this ginger dead mix to activate and become the ginger dead man is human blood. And luckily, this bakery employee early on, his first instinct when he gets a cut is to immediately move his hand over an open jug of flour. That's everybody's move, right? The first time you're in a restaurant, you cut yourself immediately. Where's the nearest food product? I need this to soak it up.
Oh, that's what makes New York City bagels so good, is just a little baker blood.
That's what they're missing.
Some cross-contamination, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's what they're missing.
I wouldn't know for sure. I would need a stopwatch. But is there anything, this establishing shot of the outside of this diner to the time when this waitress has a bullet hole in her head, has to be the fastest intro of a movie of all time. Like, you can't even muster up the words, "Oh, hey, it's Gary Busey," before this waitress is dead on the counter.
Oh, I had to make sure I didn't miss something, or like I rewound back to the beginning, just to make sure that I didn't miss like the first 2 minutes of that scene, because it feels like it just started in the middle.
He's got his gun drawn already, ready to fire when it cuts to the inside of the diner.
We're cinephiles. It's in media res, you guys. It's in media res. Yes, yes. We need to show that we understand the language of the ginger dead man.
Yeah, we'd really be doing these ginger dead men movies a disservice if we didn't use language like that, right?
No,
I can see where you're coming from.
Yeah, the mise en scène, all of that. It's and in true full moon fashion, I clocked this. This is a 70-minute movie, and a full 15 minutes of that, I would say, are opening and closing credits. So this is all told a 55-minute-long movie, which still feels pretty long for what ultimately does feel like a Mad TV sketch, with kind of just more of a movie wrapped around it. The thing I think was interesting and kind of surprised me about this, and it shouldn't have, because we've watched enough Charles Band movies at this point to understand, like, Charles Band likes to err on the side of character development and dialogue, even if it sometimes like slows the movie down. Sometimes it gives the movie, like, if you take it, apply this to like a Head of the Family or a Blood Dolls or something like that, it turns it into this kind of hyperactive, bizarre, kinky Tennessee Williams play, you know. Mm-hmm. And in this movie, I think it kind of slows things down a little bit, because the movie is called The Ginger Dead Man, and you're kind of just waiting for them to get to the fireworks factory, you know. But there's a lot of characters like talking about grief and their shattered dreams and like their interpersonal relationships, and like, I think it's a good instinct to err on that side. But for a movie like The Ginger Dead Man, you might just kind of want to get to the gross stuff, right?
Yeah, I felt like this was the longest 70-minute movie, the first one specifically, where I was like, wow, it's really only 70 minutes? I feel like I've been sitting here for 90, and I'm only halfway through.
Yeah, it
but
does
once
lose
he comes,
a little
it is enjoyable.
Well, also, screen, Adam, fantastic. I wanted you specifically for this episode, too, because there is something you will lose a bar bet to every time with this movie, which is its pro wrestling angle.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm. I do love any pro wrestling angle thrown in movies.
Are we just talking about the fact that the Amos actor looks just like John Cena?
Well,
that I can't see him. No.
The fact that he has a Baker wrestling character who comes to save the day at the end in old gimmick is, I appreciate that every time.
It was pretty funny. Yeah, the Butcher Baker is quite a character. I did misunderstand early on, because he said something like "straight from Hell's Kitchen," and I'm just like, "Is this? Do they think Hell's Kitchen is in Arkansas? Like, what's going on?" But I think I realized later he's making a play on the fact that he is a baker, you know. But this all takes place in Waco, Texas, and yeah, that's quite far from Hell's Kitchen, for those who don't know.
Yeah, this wrestler's origin story is that he grew up hanging out with Daredevil.
Yes, the mean streets with Foggy Nelson. I think it takes a full 25 minutes in this 55-minute movie for the ginger dead man to actually show up. And he doesn't do a lot, to be honest. Like, he kind of shows up. Like, you can tell sometimes it's Gary Busey's voice, and sometimes they pitch up the music a little bit and, like, to try and cover the fact that this is a sound alike, you know, that it's somebody trying to sound like Gary Busey, because I feel like they just didn't want to endure him for a whole day of voiceover work. You know, it seems kind of like they were just like, all right, let's just get him out of here while we can and just kind of piece together what we have. But like, mm-hmm. some of the dialogue that the Ginger Dead Man has is just such filler. Like, it's got this weird energy of like, it's clearly scripted, but it feels like they want it to feel improvised. You know what I mean? Like, it feels, if it's written to be very off the cuff, but the delivery is wrong. Like, there's a scene where he's just like yelling at a rat for like 30 seconds. It's like, hey, rat. What are you? Some kind of rat? Or like, I don't know. He's just, it goes on for so long. He doesn't even kill the rat. He's just yelling at a rat.
He's just making friends.
He's just making friends everywhere he goes, you know? Yeah. It's a weirdly kind of aimless movie in a lot of ways. And I think they are kind of so like struggling premise, to find what the story is.
I think it was like, we have this premise, we got to do something with it. I think the story of piggybacking a little bit on the Mad TV part, the story about how it made its way to Charlie Band is pretty funny, which is that Bill Butler saw that Mad TV did a sketch with a Snuggles bear who killed the woman in the ad doing laundry. And he thought to himself, like, oh, this is close to what I wanted to do. And so I probably can't really pitch this. And he said Charlie Band was awesome, Matt, asking him sometimes, like, hey, what's the craziest idea you've ever had? Like, what's the, like, the one thing that you just, like, a premise that you think of as just totally bananas that you can never get made? And he, without hesitation, said Ginger Dead Man. Mm-hmm. And Charlie Band was just like, great, I love it, you're writing it. And that's just how it went. And I think you can kind of see it a bit in this movie, where it's like, that there's this idea, it's almost like the idea of having Busey and the idea of having such a ludicrous origin story and villain was enough of a selling point to them. And the rest seems like superfluous details. And I think that it's kind of tackled that way. That's kind of how it reads to me. Like, I don't really watch it thinking anything is that consequential in the movie. I mean, it is a movie called The Ginger Dead Man, after all. So
yeah.
I don't know why I would try to assign too much depth to it, but it reads like someone had this idea and they said, we're going to get this thing made because it's going to be really silly and really ridiculous. And the character design is silly and ridiculous. The voiceover work is silly. And like you said, pseudo scripted sounding, but I think they struggled a little bit in trying to make it into a movie that feels like more than like a one punchline joke, essentially. Like, you're totally right about the Tennessee Williams aspect. And we've talked about that in multiple movies, Head of the Family and other ones, where it takes on this really weird kind of, almost, there's almost like this Southern soap opera happening at the same time.
Yeah.
And you get shades of that here, but it's not really fleshed out. And that's why the comment I made before about Robin Sidney is because, like, she's really trying to play a character here. But really, it seems like all they need are humans for the Ginger Dead Man to bounce off of.
Basically.
You just need kind of nameless dead meats here.
I was a little disappointed that they didn't use the environment a little bit more, like kind of keep it on theme with like bakery themed murders, you know, like there wasn't really a lot of that. There's a woman who gets totally frosted at one point, which is a little ridiculous. And then some like butcher knives come into effect. But like the Ginger Dead Man's signature weapon for much of this movie is just a gun. Like, that feels like a missed opportunity. Like, he should have like a rolling pin, or at the very least, like, I don't know, put a bunch of spikes through a rolling pin. I don't know. Like
there should have been at least one person whose body was found laying on the floor with like a piping bag sticking out of their mouth or something.
Yeah, something like that. Also, like, it's worth noting, this is kind of like a little mom and pop bakery that appears to have like an industrial facility attached to the back. Like, for it's a massive, massive like baking area that they have back there. And it's just a tiny little like storefront up front.
Yeah, but it's a tiny storefront with Axis Chemicals in the background.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Oh yeah, and she makes the one gingerbread cookie and puts it in this walk-in oven,
Yeah.
which it just doesn't seem like a good use of time. You should probably make more than one.
Is a walk-in oven a thing? I feel like that's such an OSHA violation.
Oh yeah, I feel like it's just a walk-in freezer that they just put like a box with some buttons on, and they were like, "This is our oven."
Yeah, some red lights inside. Yeah, that's all you need. Yeah, it was basically that. It's just kind of a ridiculous concept of a walk-in oven. And yeah, she does like basically take this whole mix of gingerbread mixings and just makes one cookie. Like that feels like you're not really distributing your resources properly. But yeah, she just makes one very large, very ugly looking cookie. And this doll, this puppet or whatever it is that's coming, yeah, animating the gingerbread man, pretty shitty looking, we'll be honest. It's
Yeah.
clearly rubbery, like the mouth doesn't fully open, like you can see the person's hand like behind the rubber facade, like working it. Like it's not one of the top tier creations that Full Moon has ever made. And even when we get to the perhaps inevitable climax where a character realizes you can defeat the gingerbread man by eating him, it doesn't look like he's eating a cookie at any point. It looks like he is eating like a
No, I mean, the gingerbread
gummy.
cookie is by nature should be like, excuse me, should be kind of crisp, right? Like,
Right,
shouldn't a
yeah.
gingerbread cookie be crisp? Like, when the guy is taking bites out of him, it's like he's biting a pancake,
Yeah,
like
yeah,
super
like an
flat and
undercooked
floppy.
pancake. Yeah, it is not a well-cooked pancake. It just feels like there's more they could be doing with this. Like there's a whole seasonal tradition of gingerbread house making. Maybe he can build a whole little city. Why isn't this set at Christmas? This is
Steve,
a
you just
seems like
said
a slam dunk.
seasonal. You just said seasonal, and I was just about to say, what is seasonal about this? This is a
Yeah.
total missed opportunity. Like, why is
That
this
is
not a
true.
Christmas movie?
This could have been a Christmas classic.
And I don't think any of them in this series are Christmas movies. I haven't seen the third one or the Evil Bong crossover yet, but I don't think any of them are Christmas movies. And
I
that
mean,
just feels like a big, like, that's just money left on the
well, in
table.
fairness, it would be difficult to compete with the gingerbread baking scene from Gremlins.
Oh, it's true. Yeah, no, that's kind of said the final word on it. But just because someone's done it before, that's never stopped Charles Band from releasing a film in the past. Like, in fact, that sometimes
This
encourages
is
him to
true.
release a
Yeah.
film. But yeah, weirdly, like, oh, and another thing we need to mention that I had no idea this was even a thing. The end credits song is written and performed by Charles Band. I did not know he was a musician. And he's singing at the end of this. He's got a pretty decent singing voice. It's kind of like a old like 80s hair metal throwback sort of song, but apparently that's him singing on this.
That is awesome. I did not realize that until just now. That's so cool. I mean,
Now,
his brother's not too shabby, so I'm
yeah.
sure
Well, and
Charlie's picked up some chops, some musical chops.
yeah.
his son, I don't think we've ever mentioned this on the show. His son is a musician. He was the lead singer of that band, The Calling, that
That's
had like
right.
a couple of like number one hits back in the 2000s. Like they were a decent sized band. So there's clearly some musical lineage. I just had no idea that Charles Band did any noodling himself. And it feels weird that it took all the way till now for it to come out. But that's kind of all I have about Gingerbread Man 1, because I have so much to say about part 2. Do we have anything else to say before we move on?
I did appreciate the Jason goes to hell aspect of the first Gingerbread Man. After
Oh.
the butcher baker eats him, he becomes the Gingerbread Man, which was like a little sliver of lore I wasn't expecting.
He
It
becomes
does.
Creighton Duke.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. Yeah.
It does make a certain amount of sense, and it also raises issues kind of like it kind of becomes like a deathbed, the bed that eats sort of concept, where like the only thing that's keeping this bed in business is that people can't stop going and sleeping on it. Like, I don't know about you guys. I don't know. I feel like I could resist a cookie pretty well. Like a gingerbread cookie that looks ugly like that. I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'm okay not eating this. Like, I don't
Oh,
know.
it's
I
not
think
appetizing whatsoever.
does not look appetizing. It looks like Gary
No.
Busey, for God's sake.
Oh,
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah, yeah. I don't
There
want to eat
are
that guy.
few things less appetizing than Gary Busey, in
It's
my opinion.
true. Yeah, absolutely.
We didn't really
Absolutely.
talk about Larry Cedar as the Jimmy Dean character,
Oh,
but
yeah.
he seems the most drawn specifically from Head of the Family to me, which I liked. But
Yeah.
he also, whatever star ranking I was going to give this movie, whether it was 2 stars, 2.5, whatever it might be, it automatically goes up half a star for me because we get to see the ginger dead man driving a car.
It's true. Yeah, that was pretty wacky.
It's amazing. It's like you got the ginger dead body and then it cuts and you got like little like Toonsis gingerbread hands on the wheel. And it's just like that raises it up for me half a star. I was laughing at the way that they had to like frame and set up the shots of the gingerbread puppet driving. I just want to watch this for 70 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, hey, you know, again, confirming my theory that the writers of Community are Full Moon fans, because Larry Seether would go on to play Pierce's dad in a couple episodes of Community.
So, oh, you're right.
I'm just confirming my theories. I'm just saying.
Another fun fact about Larry Seether is we were looking up his IMDb the other day when I was first watching this, and he plays the creature in the Twilight Zone movie.
Really? That's out on the wing? Plane.
Yeah. He's the creature.
I had no idea.
That thing, I was very excited to learn that.
That thing scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. Like, that thing scared me so bad. Yeah. Well, let's talk about something that didn't scare me so bad. The Ginger Dead Man 2, Passion of the Crust. This was released July 4th, 2008. It's directed by William Butler as
Happy
Sylvia
birthday,
St. Croix.
America. Here's
Happy
another
birthday.
Ginger Dead Man.
Move over, Will Smith. This isn't your weekend anymore. This was written by Bill Butler, Muffy Boulding, and Aaron Strongoni. And this stars John Vulich, Kayvon Mosey, John Carl Beekler, Kelsey Sanders, Frank Nicotero, Joseph Porter, David Dakota, Greg Nicotero, Adam Green, Jacob Witkin, and Michelle Bauer. So Gary Busey is out. John Vulich is in. John Vulich was a special effects artist, the former protege of Tom Savini, and he's the founder of Optic Nerve Studios. They are the Emmy-winning effects house, best known for doing the makeup for Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Angel, and the X-Files. And
we might even see a couple of those creature designs in this movie.
I think there's definitely a Buffy guy in here. There's 100% a Buffy guy. We did also lose Vulich back in 2016 at the age of 55. So a lot of unfortunately gone before their time folks involved in these movies. A couple of wacky credits here. John Vulich is just credited as himself instead of as the Ginger Dead Man. And there's an actress in here named Stephanie Denton who is credited as still owes Sylvia $20. And I'm not sure what that means. I know Sylvia St. Croix is William Butler's pseudonym for this. I think he's pulling a David Dakota. David Dakota would always use the name Ellen Talbot if he wanted to distance himself from the movie he was making. So I'm wondering if Butler is making the same thing. Although it doesn't seem that Butler is like ashamed or embarrassed of this movie. So maybe it's a DGA
I think he wasn't
thing.
Sure what to feel. Like, yeah. I think he was like, I'm going to play it safe and I'm going to use my nom de plume, Sylvia St. Croix, on this one. And I think, you know, by the time the movie was the final version of the movie was out, I don't know that he necessarily would want to distance himself from it. But I'm going to assume that, like, when this thing was in pre-production and everything like that, this was an Alan Smithy all the way.
I wouldn't be surprised because this movie really took me on a bit of a roller coaster ride, because as people who comment on Full Moon movies, who try and watch as many of them as possible, who host this whole podcast about it, it feels like the humor in this movie was directed straight at us. It is a very loving, rather sly, rather self-deprecating parody of the entire Full Moon process, like of everything from making the movies to releasing the movies to the declining quality of the movies. All of that is present in this movie. It's a pretty funny, like pretty sharp satire that is unfortunately trapped in a really fucking bad Ginger Dead Man horror movie. Like, doesn't it feel like these are two extremely different movies that are just kind of like clashing into each other? Like, the Ginger Dead Man stuff almost has no bearing on anything that's happening in the rest of the plot.
I wouldn't disagree with that, Steve. But I would say that outside of some of the problematic elements of this movie, which are pretty front and center, I loved this.
Okay.
I had so much fun watching this. Like, I would, and even though I could see like the idea to make a meta movie was maybe more important to them than to make a Ginger Dead Man movie.
Yeah.
And one is sort of shoehorned into the other.
Yeah.
I laughed many times in this movie. I appreciated the cameos. I appreciated seeing, you know, David Dakota's scene in particular really tickled me. I had so much fun with it. Like you said earlier, this wasn't the movie I expected.
No,
I expected another version of the first movie. I was not expecting something that was self-referential, something that was meta, something that was commenting on, you know, the kind of stuff that Full Moon had been putting out with, you know, with an attention to sort of the fact that they've gone through these periods of prosperity. So these kind of attention to the fact that, you know, now they're in kind of a state of decline.
Yeah.
I really liked that about it. And I think because this thing is like 75 minutes long, I started it, the fake movie intro. I was like, okay, this, well, first of all, looks better. I wasn't getting a migraine trying to watch it from how standard def the first movie was.
Oh man, they really got to get on those. Those mid-2000s like digital transfers look like dog shit.
Yeah, and this looked better right away. And I was like, okay, so it's the fake movie beginning. I can, not my favorite movie beginning, but I can deal with it when it's handled a certain way. And there's a level of humor and care that this is brought with, I suppose. And then just from the opening credits, which I will let our guest talk a little bit about the opening credits and what they're doing there with that one. I was on board and I was like, I can deal with the level that this movie is going to for 70 minutes. And I was never bored. I laughed. I was shocked by some of the things that they did, including this shameless theme song.
Let's talk about this theme song. Do you have a perspective on this? Because this was so jarring to me. I felt like I was going insane.
I watched the first one and then immediately started the second one. And I got out my Full Moon sequel checklist and it was like, okay, recap. Long title sequences like that everyone gets a title card.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, dreading it. But then, I mean, other than the obvious problematic things that a lot of early 2000 movies kind of fall into, I really enjoyed this movie. I even was texting Jared in the middle of the movie. And I was like, hey, this is really enjoyable. David Dakota, probably my favorite part in the whole movie. That was amazing.
Oh, yeah. No, I laughed out loud at that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And that, I wish it was less realistic, but that really is how some of those productions go. Like, I've been in those situations, sans Ginger Dead Man, a few times, and I started getting anxious when they're talking about the money and financing the next person, the next film, and robbing Peter to pay Paul. I was like, oh, no, this is too close to home.
Yeah.
But I had such a good time with this movie and the blatant run.
What
it's called. I thought it was like a Weird Al situation where they were just doing a straight parody of it, but it wasn't.
It's like, okay, so this opening theme song is just like a straight ripoff of I Don't Give a Damn About My Reputation by Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. Okay, so like, when I say it's a ripoff, I mean it's the exact song. They just changed the words to kind of be about the Ginger Dead Man, and it was just throwing me off so much. Because first of all, I'm just getting like Freaks and Geeks flashbacks. I'm thinking about that. I mean, just like, I'm trying to understand the calculus that went into pairing these lyrics with this song specifically. Like, is this a song parody? Is this just like a ripoff? Like, it's not a funny song necessarily. It's
also
not
commenting on Full Moon's bad reputation.
They're commenting on the fact that
most people look at these movies like they're shitty and don't deserve anyone's attention. And I feel like that's called back to a bunch of times in the movie. And that's, I think I caught on to that very quickly.
Okay.
And I went, oh, okay, this is where they're going with this. Like, I can really, really appreciate that. And then just seeing the chaotic set, which I've never been on a set like that. So Adam, you've got some experiences that we don't have here, but like, I was just grinning seeing, you know, Michael Deake on the set, John Carl Beekler there. There were some other people, the Nicoteros in there too, who popped up. Who was it again? I could look it up, but I'd rather just, Adam, you probably remember. Who was it again that was playing the lead character in the fake movie opening?
Oh,
It's
Kenneth Hall?
Kenneth
Kenneth
Hall.
Hall. Yeah, that's who it
Yeah,
was.
I had a great time just seeing everybody. Oh, look, it's Adam Green. Oh, look, it's Greg Nicotero. They called in all their special effects guys for
And
this one.
it's again, that's where this movie is just really working. Like all this stuff on set, there's like a young guy who is clearly like supposed to be sort of a Charles Band analog, who's just like, he's an optimistic kind of huckster who really just wants to like make these movies any way he can because he's got a legacy to live up to and he just has a genuine enthusiasm for it. But he's been facing hard times with his studio, and like the online critics have just been like ripping apart. The fans don't seem to like him anymore. So he's kind of trapped in this in-between place. He knows the movies he's making aren't very good. And they show the beginning, like a really funny parody of Puppet Master at the beginning. They're making a movie called Tiny Terrors 9. And these puppets are hilariously stupid. One of them is just called Shit for Brains, and it's a baby doll with shit on its head. There's one that's like a coffee pot with Christmas lights on it, and then the aforementioned human dildo, which is horrifying looking. It's
Oh,
just
that
like
haunted my dreams, the
that
human
thing
dildo.
is ridiculous. It's like a very realistic looking dildo with like a wig and googly eyes stapled to it and a little suit. It's deeply
It
ridiculous.
looks like someone tried to take like a very lifelike dildo and stage it to look like the cover of Terror Train.
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh my God, yeah.
A little bit. Yeah, no, it's got a little bit of that energy. And so all of this stuff is working really well. And then Michelle Bauer comes in just absolutely crunching on the scenery and having a grand old time. Like she comes in with an oversized box of various pastries, including a large, unrealistic looking rubber ginger dead man who's just in the box now. We did get our lengthy recap of the first movie as per tradition before the credits, but it still doesn't necessarily tie cleanly into this film. It's just this guy's being dropped off and he's going to wreak some havoc on the set. But again, like the big twist of this movie, and I'll kind of like jump around for people who don't if you don't want to have the movie spoiled, I apologize, but there's a kind of make-a-wish situation where like a young horror fan who's terminally ill is being shown the studio, and it turns out that he is undercover as a former or as like a current online blog writer who is just so disgruntled about the bad output of the movie that he just wants to kill everybody. So that's funny. That's funny. That's all a good reveal. But that really has not, I was expecting some kind of reveal where like, oh, I summoned the ginger dead man to come do my business. No. That's not the case. The ginger dead man is just there.
Yeah, he just
Like,
picked a bad weekend to show up and take this tour.
yeah, there's
Oh, yeah.
two very distinct villains of this movie. Like, so that's, I really feel like these are just like, they had one script, which is the Full Moon parody script. And then they're like, all right, we just need to tie it in with our brand a little more. Let's do some wraparound pieces of the ginger dead man to kind of make this a little bit more on brand.
One thing I
And it's
appreciate
really
about this
incongruous.
movie is the previously on Ginger Dead Man opening.
Yeah.
Because I'll be honest with you, like, you don't really have to watch the first movie. Like,
You
if
really
you
don't.
watch the first 6 minutes or so of this movie, you get like a little greatest hits run of all the important stuff that happened in that movie. They subscribe very much to the Silent Night, Deadly Night 2 art of filmmaking here, which is
Oh,
like
yeah.
just a lot of recycled footage to get this thing to a 75-minute runtime. But I liked that about it because when it started, I was just like, man, this is succinct. Everything you need to see is here. Like,
Yeah.
this movie is a lot of fun. I would say, like, if you want to jump into the Ginger Dead Man series, like, start with this one. Watch 7 minutes of the first movie that's highlighted, and you're good to go. Like, you
Yeah.
don't have to, don't look back in your rear view. You're good.
Oh,
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think this is the T2 of Ginger Dead Man movies.
yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. No, it totally stands alone, builds on, and exceeds the original a lot of ways. I think I still just run into a lot of problems with the Ginger Dead Man stuff in this movie because it is some of the most offensive and gross stuff that we've seen in a Full Moon movie yet. I'm speaking specifically of a kill involving a cartoonishly gay makeup artist who gets sodomized to death with a curling iron, and it's clear from his face that he's enjoying it.
It was a lot more graphic than I was anticipating. Like
really
see, like,
graphic.
The full in out, and that did not sell me. That aged like milk.
It's really
even
gross.
At the time,
it's in poor taste.
Wasn't good.
It's offensive. It's stupid. And like, and it just took me right out of it. Similar later, like we get a sex scene between Michelle Bauer and like a young guy in Buffy makeup, and like Ginger Dead Man is just watching and jacking off. And I'm just like, I'm kind of embarrassed for everybody involved right now. This is just like, oh man. Yeah.
I'm going to split the difference. I'm going to say that the first scene, which is sort of like the reverse Judy from Sleepaway Camp.
Yeah.
Is definitely offensive, but by design. I think they were really, and I think that's a commentary. Like I went to see Tenebrae the other night in the theater, which is probably my favorite Argento movie. Mm-hmm. One of the things I really like about Tenebrae is the kind of meta commentary aspect of it, where he's kind of saying like, oh, you feel like I'm a misogynistic and violent, like I'm going to up the ante in a lot of ways and comment on it with the things that happen in the movie. It's almost like his body double. And I really appreciate body double too. And on a much, 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 much smaller scale, I feel like that's what's happening here. And like, I think that they're just going big, because I do think 16, 18 years ago when this movie was coming out, you could do that more without fear of repercussion. And I don't necessarily condone it, but I can understand where their heads were, where they were like, we're going to do something that's going to get a reaction out of people. We sometimes talk a little bit about trauma. This is the most trauma-esque full moon movie
Absolutely.
That I think we've covered so far. And Adam, you said it to me the other day, and I was like, or yesterday maybe, and I was like, you can save it for Mike, but how did you describe this movie to me?
It was a full moon's Terra Firma.
Yeah.
So if you've seen Troma's Terra Firma, you got
very
Lord playing the blind director, everything's self-referential. That I got big Terra Firma vibes. I think that might be why they had to throw the Ginger Dead Man in there, because if it was just a killer, it'd be pretty similar.
Absolutely. Well, and Full Moon is never quite as like self-referential as Troma is. Like Troma is always kind of dropping little things like that. And I think around this era of Full Moon, where like with Evil Bong, and we get all the crossovers from the other Full Moon characters coming into the Bongaverse and stuff like that, I think they're starting to do a little bit more Troma style world building as opposed to the Marvel style world building they were doing in the early days. But still, they've never been quite as self-referential or as self-parodying as they are in this movie.
Oh, and it's called Cheatham Studios. That cracked
Cheatham
me up.
Studios.
Cheatham
Studios. Yeah.
Cheatham Studios. They
that's,
know what's up.
That's such an old-timey joke. Like, that's the old Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe joke. You know, like, that's a ridiculous thing to throw in here. You know, so it's a very disjointed movie. I think it's very, like, you get moments where it's like a really funny, really sharp movie, and then other moments where it's like, this looks like it was shot on a cell phone for $2 by a teenage boy who watches too much Family Guy. And it's just like gross out and offensive and stupid. And then it flips it around on you, and you get like this really nice monologue from the guy about why he feels like the full moon movies that he's making still matter, and like why should I have to kowtow to critics? Like, and why can't I just make the movies that I want to watch? You know,
right.
Like, there's some smart, incisive stuff here that's just getting hacked to bits by a little killer cookie, you know?
And when I said before that I split the difference, and I was talking about the curling iron scene, I definitely, like I said before, don't condone that. I wish that that scene was not in the movie. And when I said before that I loved it, I was being a little hyperbolic. Like, I had a lot of fun with it and will probably revisit it at some point. Mm-hmm. Without the first one. But I do think, like, I don't know, maybe it was the mood I was in, but even like the scene, like you said, with Michelle Bauer and the Buffy looking guy.
Yeah.
I was laughing. Something about the lunacy of it, like, got that reaction out of me. And even like the main conceit of this guy who is the online blogger and critic coming in under the guise of like a kid from the Make-A-Wish Foundation is not something to inherently laugh at. And it is played slightly for laughs in the movie.
Yeah.
But, and so like that aspect of it, I'm kind of like, oh man, yeah, this is, something you, they wouldn't do this and they wouldn't, you know, present this character this way anymore. And then I kind of, there was enough endearing stuff for me to have a lot of fun with it. So when I say loved it, what I think what I meant was I went in with zero expectations, thinking we were right. going to get something that was somehow more kind of sterile and boring than the first movie.
Yeah.
And then to have it be such a complete 180 and to also feel like, oh, wow, this is so, as someone who scrutinizes and critiques and analyzes full moon movies, there's just an extra rewarding element to this one in that way. And enough of it worked for me to enjoy myself and smile through maybe 65 of the 75 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I can get on board with that. Yeah, there's stuff that you just really can't defend. But then you get two genuinely funny moments with David Dakota, one of which is based on real life. So the line where an actor comes up to the director and says, like, oh, was that okay? And Dakota says, was that in focus? It's like, yep, kid, you were fucking brilliant. William Butler says that was a real thing, almost verbatim said to him by Albert Band when they were filming Ghoulies 2. You know, where he really wants to do a good job. And Albert Band's like, were you in focus? All right, you're fucking brilliant. Go on, move on with your day. And then we get the later joke with Dakota where, you know, Tommy's like, oh, he's known for his gothic themes and subtle homoeroticism. And then a big jacked guy in tiny underwear and angel wings comes out. It's like, is this right for the character? Like, really funny. And it shows that they have a good sense of humor about themselves and about their place in these movies.
I agree. And I wonder if I would have enjoyed this as much if I just watched it by itself without watching the first one right before it. Because I agree with Jared. Like, I went into this with zero expectation, like just preparing myself for the worst. So I think there was an element of surprise that may have, I would like to revisit this solo in like a few months, but I think there definitely was an element where I was just so surprised at the jump in quality that I may have loved it more than necessary.
Oh, I 100% think that's what happened with me. I feel like it was just such a surprise, and it was a lot of it was so delightful. I think when I come down to earth a little bit from it, I'll be like, oh yeah, you know, that's sort of, it is more middle of the road, but I appreciate a lot of the things they were doing and swings that they were taking in the movie for sure.
But this is not like an Evil Bong or a Killjoy. Like, this is the movies of this era that we've covered so far tend to be distinguished by the lack of care. And so that's kind of what I was expecting. Even Ginger Dead Man has kind of a tossed off quality to it. This one, like, clearly they wanted to say something and wanted to have some fun. And you could feel that there's just a little bit more energy behind it because they're poking fun at it. They brought in a lot of their buddies, like John Carroll Beekler is in this movie. Both the Nicotero brothers are in this movie. Adam Green, like we all mentioned, like, they're bringing in people. People wanted to be involved in this, at least in this capacity. And there's a reason.
The director of Hatchet is a homeless man. Which is a terrific cameo.
I appreciated that about it. And I did appreciate the little bit of effort. You know, we've even covered movies that came after this, like Demonic Toys 2, that just did not have any of this energy and could really have benefited from it. And that's another William Butler, too. So, yeah.
And this movie, like Demonic Toys 2, was searching for an energy that this movie had. Like, I think there was definitely a comparison to be made watching it, but it was sort of, it all kind of felt like, this is the movie that Demonic Toys wanted to be, but they just didn't know how to utilize location, anything like that. Really just Leslie Jordan kind of vamping around made parts of that one enjoyable.
I mean, they really needed a haunted dildo, I think is the answer. Like, that would have solved a lot of problems in Demonic Toys too, is more haunted dildo.
You know, we've had an issue with the designs of some babies in the Full Moon universe.
Yeah.
Man, did I laugh when I saw Shit for Brains. Not because I think so like stupid. Shit on the head is funny. Everything else about the character design was funny to me. That he's got a little like jeans and cowboy shirt on.
He like, keeps saying little... just like duh duh duh. Like it's so stupid that it's genuinely it's clearly like intentionally stupid in a funny way. I love that.
It actually reminded me of my mom, who, as a teenager, Shit for Brains.
Go on.
She would call me Shit for Brains because, you know, I was probably doing something stupid, especially as a teenager. But as soon as that character came on, I was just like, yes, like, this is my guy. This is my new guy.
That's fair. My mom used to call me percolator. So, you know, I saw myself in here too. Yeah. Yeah. It's very, yeah.
No, my mom used to call me haunted dildo. So I win.
There you go. There you go. Well, Adam, we know you need to get out of here pretty soon. We thank you so, so much for being here.
Oh, man. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for bringing these onto the show and for letting us talk about some genuine surprises that I really was not expecting. Where can people find your stuff and what you're up to?
Yeah, Adam, you got anything of note coming out soon? Anything the public might want to know about?
As a matter of fact, I do. I have a few films that are going to be hitting festivals this year. One is called Killer, which I wrote and directed. There's another film that hopefully we're going to have done in a couple months called Sprinkles that should be hitting festivals that Jared helped out on for sure. He was a big help for Sprinkles. And another film called Anton, which is a feature that I'm actually starring in. And that's like a body horror movie with myself, Clayvon Carlowitz, Rigo Garay, Hannah Fearman from VHS. So that one I'm really excited about. And you can find me on Instagram at Adam Torkel. I'm not super big on the social media, but I do love talking horror with horror people from all over the place. So please add me at Adam Torkel. And I just want to thank you guys again for having me. I'm a big fan of the podcast. I listen every Friday. So I'm very excited to be able to do this.
Well, thanks, Adam. Thank you so much.
Also, you know, you mentioned the movie Anton, which is great because I know a handful of those Glass Eye Picks people that you were naming there. So that's super fun. I can't wait for more information on that. But I feel like I would be hard pressed if, you know, you were here right now, just giving your final thoughts about this. Where does this kind of fit within all of your, you know, Full Moon and Empire movies, like stuff that we would be covering on the show? Like, where does it slide in? Is it kind of top tier, bottom tier, middle of the road? And also, like, just what is something when you think back to your time with Full Moon, like, what is something either could be involving Charlie Band or not involving Charlie Band, but just something that comes to mind from your days working with the company?
I would definitely say the first Ginger Dead Man, I would put low tier, like Evil Bong territory, which is probably like my bottom of the tier list.
Yeah.
The second one I would definitely put middle tier. I'll revisit it in a couple months and see where it holds
top
up
of the middle
tier. But I wouldn't put this with like a subspecies or the few Puppet Masters. I would put that below the top tier of Full Moon. And as far as Full Moon, there were a lot of just like fun times, like hanging out with Charlie, hanging out with the other guests at the conventions. We would do like the road show. So we would do like this big live show where we brought out some props and had someone dress as the Ginger Dead Man and run around. Those were always fun. But I definitely have to say my favorite part was just listening to like Charlie Band store. Like people would come by and visit. So like you'd have like me, Charlie Band, and Bill Lustig just standing there. And I was just kind of sitting back listening to stories about like how they were making the 70s and 80s. And that's definitely some of my favorite memories from Full Moon. And I've also made friends that I've met at these conventions who have been my friends for now over a decade.
Was there anybody?
The communal aspect is really what I like about Full Moon.
Was there anybody at those, you know, those conventions and through Full Moon who you had a chance to like meet and network that really like jumped out to you as like, holy shit, I can't believe I'm in the same room as so-and-so? Or
there was a few like definite surreal moments where like we were waiting to do our show and we were in a green room and it was me, my buddy James Morgart, who is the one who got me the job at Full Moon, Charlie Band, the sisters from The Shining, and Robert Englund.
What?
Yeah. So like situations like that, or seeing Lloyd Kaufman and Charlie talking, it's like, oh my God, it's East and West Coast collide, like things like that.
Tupac and Biggie of independent guerrilla filmmaking.
Yeah. Although some people would be personally mad at me, like I made some of the movies, you know, they would be like, oh, I bought Evil Bong, like what were you thinking? It's just like, I'm sorry, sir, like I apologize. Can I offer you a Intruder DVD instead? But
can I offer you this Evil Bong figurine?
Oh yeah, which wasn't a bonk. We had the resin statues, but because of the laws back then, we weren't able to make it an actual bonk.
Oh, it couldn't be functional?
It couldn't be functional, which was...
Makes sense. No, yeah, that makes sense. But I imagine it'd be, you know... If I know anything about functional. People who make bongs, it's they're pretty innovative in their approach to carving anything out to be a bong.
That's true.
So, just DIY.
I mean, really did enjoy my time working with Full Moon.
And it's cool to hear. Like, we hear so many people who have had personal experience, like, either in the movies or working on the sets or working in the periphery. And that seems to be the general consensus. They're just like, everybody's very loyal and seems to be having a good time making these movies.
Oh, yeah. And Charles Band is a blast to be around. Just watching him, like, sell stuff. Like, we used to have the Charles Band collection. Mm-hmm. And he would always, seeing as that I'm Charles Band, I'm going to sign this Charles Band collection for it. You know, just a consummate salesman. He was great.
Oh, that sounds awesome. Oh, well, thank you so much again for being here. Jared, where can people find our show if they want to hear it?
Well, if you like what we do, you can jump onto Apple Podcasts or Spotify, leave us a 5-star rating and perhaps a brief review if you feel so inclined. You can follow us on Instagram at puppetmasters_castlefreaks. You can follow me personally at _giallo_jerry or Steve at @minotaurmatador. We're also out there on X and Threads and Blue Sky and any social. We have a YouTube channel with thumbnails and audio versions of the show if you like to consume your podcast that way, and some more content will be finding its way on there in the near future for sure. Steve, this is not the only thing though that you're plugging, so what else have you got going on?
Absolutely. I have my other podcast, Cinemarcade. That's cinema and arcade mashed together, because that's what we do. We watch a movie and then we play the video game based on it. It leads to some good times. We cover Balls of Fury 1 week and Seven Samurai the next week. You never quite know where it's going to end up. I think the most recent episode we recorded was on Reservoir Dogs, which is really unhinged and fun. We're bringing some more people from the Austin comedy scene around to be on our show, and it's been a lot of fun. So definitely check those out. And be sure to check us out next week, because we've got a fun one coming up for you. We're going to be talking about a movie that I have absolutely no basis in. I've never seen this and I don't really know anything about it, but it's called Ghost Town, and I don't think it's the Ricky Gervais one, but I think it's in fact an older horror movie from the 80s.
Yeah, we're dipping back into Empire days for this one, so looking forward to that. So yeah, thank you again, Adam, for taking the time to join us today.
Anytime, guys. Thank you.
Behind the scenes and stories from Full Moon and movie sets and of the like, trauma and stuff like that. So yeah, we're always looking forward to have conversations like that. And if you want to tune in next week and enjoy a conversation about an old Empire movie, we've got Ghost Town lined up for you. So we will see you next week.